The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 421. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest is a man that is making his return for, I don't know, the fifth, sixth, seventh time. I don't know. I've lost count. But it doesn't matter because he's a good man, a fellow podcaster. I'm talking about Gerald Glassford, the man behind the Pop Culture Cosmos podcast, the Lakers Fast Break podcast, Inside Fantasy Sports, I believe, is his other show. I mean, the man's got a lot of shows. That's just what I'm getting at. But as many of you who are fans of the PVD Cast probably know, once a month, I journey on over to the Pop Culture Cosmos with Gerald, and we talk about the state of pro wrestling, and we talk about topics that are going on in the industry, and I always look forward to doing it. It's a great, great time. I love chatting with Gerald about pro wrestling. So this time, I kind of switched the tables a little bit. I invited Gerald to come on the PVD Cast and talk about our favorite matches, all right, of all time, the matches that made an impression on us. We also do dabble a little bit in some current news, kind of getting a little bit of a discussion going as to, you know, with the recent departures of some people from AEW and the recent signing of some folks for AEW, how's that balancing out in terms of star power? You lost Cody Rhodes, CM Punk, Jane Cardgill. You've replaced them with Mercedes Moné, Will Ospreay, and Okada. We kind of talk a little bit about that in our humble opinion, who made out on that deal, so to speak. So it's going to be a great episode full of great wrestling insight. But before I throw it to a quick break, I need to thank a great sponsor of this podcast. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and they have tons of comics from every era, whether you're talking the gold, silver, bronze, or modern era. But they also have tons of back issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, various collectibles, posters, some really high-end stuff behind the counter. I mean, we're talking pristine editions of some of your favorite superhero comics. Basically, look, you owe it to yourself if you're in Central Ohio to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But if you're not in Ohio, you can still check out the store. They have a great website, wgcomics.com, and they're very active on their Facebook page. Just look for at WGComics. And again, I thank Jeff and all the fine folks down there at the store for their continued support of the PVD Cast. All right, with that out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear myself and Gerald Glassford talk some wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down this evening with my tag team partner of podcasting, Gerald Glassford. Gerald, welcome back to the PVD Cast. How have you been, my friend?
Oh, is the camera on? Oh, my gosh. All right. We're going to get you in the cage, sucker. It's over for you. And those titles, shine them up, baby, because they're all ours this Friday. Friday in the cage. You guys are going down. Oh, I'm good, man.
How was the feedback on the promo?
A lot of people were very happy about it, very funny about it, actually got decent ratings, but most importantly, the comments, like you said, Although it's very unusual that a lot of people are asking me, including my wife, to keep the mask on more often. I don't know what they mean by that.
I don't know either.
You look good with the mask, Gerald. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also like the fact I was wearing the Jobs Apple style, I guess, Henley that they absolutely like with the turtleneck on it there. So, yes. So, Steve Jobs, there you go.
I was going to go more Christian Cage.
Okay. You know. Well, you know what? The patriarch is still there. Absolutely. And as much as AEW has tried to destroy that angle, when you could have made it a year-long, spectacular, headlining AEW angle that it is, still didn't quite work out that way, but they still have one more good match, I think, that's going to be on free TV. Because why, God forbid, why would you want to pay for it if you could put mm-hmm. on free TV? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Let's talk a little bit, because while we were setting things up for today, mm-hmm. you threw out something that you wanted to discuss. So let's go ahead and discuss it. It's a 3-for-3 trade between AEW and WWE, it seems, over the last year or so. And
the reason why I said this is because your show and mine, I didn't care which, and I'm glad we'll be able to talk about it on your show. It's just, yeah, like you said, in the year since main eventers have left AEW, and look who replaced them. That's what I was trying to, yeah. So like you said, it's a trade. It's a trade.
It's kind of, if you will. So let's run down on one side for AEW, talk about Okada, Ospreay, Monet, and in the WWE, you look at CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, Jane Cargill. It's an interesting, I guess, situation with those, because who would have thunk 4 years ago or 5 years ago when AEW first kicks off that we would be talking about WWE and Cody going back to the WWE? So I'm going to let you share your opinions first, Gerald.
Okay.
What do you think of this swap in talent, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because we're talking about main headliners. I mean, we're not talking about there anyone about as far as all the movement that goes on between those companies, or all the movement as far as who's leaving AEW in and out. We're talking about AEW having the need to replace three headliners that are gone, and Jade Cargill, CM Punk, and of course Cody Rhodes, and replace them with Kazuchika Okada, Mercedes Moné, aka Mercedes Varnado, aka Sasha Banks, and also as well, of course, Will Ospreay. If it was are we talking about a global perception, or are we talking about an American perception? Because I think that's the way you have to look at it, because globally, it would be more impactful than it is in America, right? As of right now. Mm-hmm. 1 year from now, we may be saying differently, but we'll see what happens. Mercedes Moné, first off, let's start with that for AEW. Mercedes Moné, she just made her star appearance on Wednesday's Dynamite. Obviously, that's the big coup of these three, because of what she could do for the women's division. Women's division, you know, a lot of great talent on that roster. You've said that before. I've said that. Not quite to my, as far as what I thought WWE, or what you said in TNA, because we both have complimented those women's rosters. But this could change the dynamic if they're smart about it. For me, I would have had, you know, the temptation to have her do a Hulk Hogan and come in there a month, take the title from Toni Storm and be the standard bearer for the women's division in AEW. The temptation to do that is just so great, because there is no marquee name that they have that's anywhere close to what she is. Let's just put it right there. When it comes to Okada, one of the best wrestlers of this century. Let's just put that out there. But does the American audience, the general fan or the general consumer at large, know who he is? Will Ospreay, one of the three best workers along with Okada, you know, one of the 10 best workers. You could say Ospreay the last 5 years has been the best wrestler on the planet. But again, does everyone know that needs to know about those two individuals? I mean, because again, two of the best 10 workers on the planet this century. I would not dispute that. But the thing is, are they able to go ahead and draw the kind of audiences outside of Japan and the UK that you need to sustain viability going forward? That's the big question, my friend. We'll get on with the other individuals here in a second, but I wanted to hear your thoughts bouncing back to you.
You said it in just three words. If they're smart, that's the problem with these three new individuals to AEW. Already we're seeing it. What is Will Ospreay's character? He came, he beat Jericho, he beat Omega, he disappeared, he comes back. He's now a babyface, but he's still in a heel group. How does that make any sense? And he's taking on another member of his stable on the last pay-per-view. Like, none of this makes sense.
Mind you, it was a fantastic match, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of making someone care about somebody that they don't know, or maybe they do know. Maybe they do know who Will Ospreay is. But again, give the people a reason to want to know the story behind these matches. Give the people what they want in terms of who these people are. And that, I think, is, again, we've said it a million times on the Pop Culture Cosmos. I've said it on this program many, many times as well. You could be as talented as anyone on this planet, but if there's not the genuine, you lose a lot. There's no connection. That's the word I was looking for. I struggled to come up with it, but you got to have the genuine connection. And again, out of these six individuals, I feel I agree with you. Mercedes Moné, definitely the cream of the crop out of all the hires that they've had recently. Definitely she can be plugged in and make a difference. And even maybe elevate some of those other women. She could be a role model in not only getting them prepared in the ring, but also the presentation outside of the ring. So, again, totally agree with you. Ospreay and Okada, both talented guys. Both I like watching both of them. But do they have that name recognition? When you walk down the street, if you stop five people and said, Will Ospreay, how many of those five people are going to know who that is?
How many are going to say Brav?
Right. You know, if you do that with Cody Rhodes, you do that with CM Punk, you're probably going to get two out of those five, maybe three out of those five. Jade Cargill is not there yet.
No.
She's got oodles of potential. So, you know, if we're going head on head, which three are the better mix, I'm picking Punk, Rhodes, and Cargill.
And that's the funny thing is because you talk about the women's division, AEW, again, it's an afterthought. It is an absolute afterthought. They treat it as a second class whatever because they give it very little time on the main shows. They give it very little space. The only thing is Timeless Toni Storm has been a good enough gimmick to even get it onto that platform. And that's the best that they've done so far in all the years of promoting us. Again, Mercedes Moné, she comes on there. They give her the prime spotlight. It's about time. But it's going to be now the women's division is squarely on her back and on Tony Khan's shoulders to go ahead and book this outright. But again, I would have her win the title ASAP, and that kind of gets the notice that you need for that women's division going forward. But again, in America, how much does the average or casual wrestling fan know about Okada and Ospreay? I understand why those two gentlemen picked AEW over the WWE to have a nice salary plus be able to still live in your respective home areas. Ospreay will still be able to live in the UK and Okada live in Japan as opposed to having to go ahead and be in the WWE lifestyle 365. I get it. I understand it. But we'll see if this was a move that was smart by them or if it's a move that maybe they'll regret or whatnot. It's all going to be based on the booking. But if we don't see an Okada Ospreay match on a premium level, like for instance, let's throw it out there, All Out in London. If I don't see that, then for the AEW title, then is it really money well spent? We'll have to wait and see. But like you said, the WWE, I mean, Cody Rhodes is going to be headlining WrestleMania, not one night, but two nights. CM Punk, he hasn't been able to even barely wrestle, and he got injured, which is going to be a problem for him. But if he can stay healthy and he can get, and he can headline two or three pay-per-views, it's paid for itself. And like you said, Jade Cargill is the secret ingredient in all of this. She must be cool with whatever it is that they're doing, whatever it is that they're planning for her long-term, because they're booking it very slowly with her. And this time, maybe next year or the year after, she may be the future of the women's division in WWE. And if that's the case, then definitely I would agree with you that it looked like the trade-off is better for the WWE.
Agreed, 100%. And, you know, we again, talk a lot about the missed opportunities that AEW has, not just with these folks. I mean, it's been a history of, I mean, we can sit here and name 10 other names of individuals that they've dropped the ball with, individuals that we think are still on the roster. We're not even sure. I mean, the other day, I forget where, what, if it was on Dynamite or if it was on Collision or what, there was a sighting of Kip Sabian. I'm like, is he still on the roster? I didn't even know that guy was still around. I thought he was long gone. But again, missed opportunities after missed opportunities. You can't keep doing this in AEW and expect for you to have a lot of success.
I agree with you. Just at this point, it's going to be something we're going to take a look at. But the trade-off, again, is at least when it comes to AEW, they were able to get talent that hopefully can lead them in the future. But I think it clearly tells you who's going to be the number one entity in this business continuously for years to come and who is going to be number two. But the thing is, how healthy will that number two be? Will it be a number two that's strong, like the height of WCW? Or will it be the not so high, like the not so high moments of WCW? So we'll see. But this is going to be hopefully a better turnaround. And again, having viable workplaces, the more the merrier, as long as they're fruitful and beneficial for the pro wrestling industry.
And you know what? I'm going to go off script because you just mentioned about having a viable other company, another place to work. News broke today that Shayna Baszler has been given an okay by the WWE to compete in the Bloodsport promotion. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, again, I don't know if it does anything for Bloodsport. I will say, though, that it's things that like this that keeps your talent happy. That's the thing. Shayna Baszler, not going to give you a great promo, but she is talented in the ring and she is believable in the ring. But she's going to be someone that may be less likely, if you want to retain her long term, to go ahead and look somewhere else because you're letting her do more things outside of the WWE universe. In fact, there's WWE talent I'm hearing now that's going to be doing maybe possibly some indie stuff down the road, especially on WrestleMania week. So if that's the case, it just makes for a better work environment. Obviously the old ways of the past, maybe that frost is like thawing out a little bit and Triple H is understanding what as talent in a modern age that they need. And that's something we've talked about is since we started, you and I, our conversations together, is Vince McMahon not being able to change with the times and the environment. And in doing so, Triple H has shown that he is. Now, still, will the booking and the storytelling work out well? I hope so. But at least he's allowing the talent to do different things in order to go ahead and be able to function properly and to be able to retain them long term. I mean, just Dominic Mysterio got married. How many times did you hear back in the day as far as WWE where wrestler gets married on one day and goes back to the ring the next in the horror stories of the WWE? I mean, Mysterio, he's got his full time off. He's getting his honeymoon, whole nine yards. They're now the way that you're treating wrestlers a little bit different. Sure, it's still a environment that's non-unionized. Still might want to look at that down the road, but you know, at least things are better now. Because Triple H understands, here it goes, here's the pun, the game more than Vince McMahon has in quite some time. or did in quite some time.
And I think that we also, let's be realistic too, and this is no disrespect to Shayna Baszler, but she's not at the top of the card. So why not let those folks in the mid card go out there and work for this indie or that indie, as long as it's not AEW or maybe even Impact or maybe even MLW.
Well, let me put it on this note, because Mercedes Moné, who, when she made her promo in AEW, that was her big, one of her big moments in her career. Who was in the audience for that big promo of her career? Not one, not two, but three female WWE superstars, including her best friend, Bayley. In a previous regime, would three WWE superstars be in the audience to go ahead and check out her promo?
Nope. So there absolutely you not.
They still do things like Kevin Nash said that, you know, he wasn't able to go ahead to, you know, be at Sting's last match. That's the case. He couldn't even be behind the scenes. I don't know if that's the case or how far that went, but if that's the case, that's still WWE being WWE, but it's lightening up. And that's hopeful for the future that we can go ahead and have a more transcendent wrestling industry.
All right. Before we get into our main topic here, Gerald, let's run down all of the great things you got going on with your various different shows. Is it four now?
No, it's just I'll keep it at three.
You got it at three. Okay.
Okay. The Pop Culture Cosmos, and it's actually on the same channel, Pop Culture Cosmos and the PCC Multiverse and the State of Pro Wrestling. It's all under the Pop Culture Cosmos banner. So if you go to Pop Culture Cosmos on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts, you're going to get the finest collection each and every week this side of the PVD cast of all your pop culture talk. You know, so I got that in there. Of pop culture, where we cover the latest news and trends each and every week, twice a week, wherever you get your podcasts and on radio stations worldwide. So just type in Pop Culture Cosmos. It'll come right up for you. Again, I pop the State of Pro Wrestling there once every month with my tag team partner, John Orlando. Every Friday, I work with a great person in Melinda Barkhouse Ross on the PC Multiverse. And then also on Mondays, my longtime guy who helped me start that show, Josh Peterson, hangs out with me for the Pop Culture Cosmos show. So yeah, if you're interested in doing it or checking out, please do so. It's really a fun show. It's very casual conversation. It's talking about the latest news and topics, whether it's in film, whether it's television, whether it's pro wrestling, whether it's video games, whether it's anything relating to whatever's trending in pop culture. We try to hit on it. We try to tackle it and talk about it. And it's an hour clean all the time, and it's right there for you. The other channels I do, as far as Inside Sports Fantasy Football, that's going to be coming up with a special episode later this month, talking about free agency and how you need to go ahead and look at it as far as your fantasy football is concerned, because fantasy football is a way of life for some people out there. So we talk about that on the Inside Sports Fantasy Football. And my show that recently got monetized a few months back is the Lakers Fast Break, where we cover the NBA and grouch and moan. I don't want to say something else worse, so I'll just say grouch and moan about the Los Angeles Lakers like no one else. Very divisive and decisive opinions. We go places that those other Lakers shows don't go because we call it like we see it, and sometimes it's not pretty. Sometimes it is. Sometimes we throw flowers, sometimes we don't, but there is no better opinionated show and actual community than the Lakers Fast Break. So hopefully you will check it out as if you're into NBA and the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Gerald for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered for your fandom. So if you're in Central Ohio, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com, and you can follow them on Facebook. Just look for @WGComics. All right. Gerald, that was very well done, sir. That was a great plug, and thank you kindly for the kind words.
Actually, like I've done that before. Wow.
Yeah, it's almost like you know what you're doing.
Well, I was thinking about it on my long drive back from Vegas from San Diego, and I was like, how many podcasts have I done? I'm like, I'm going on 2,000. I'm in that 2,000 range. It's like, wow. I don't know if that's that. Put that on my headstone. What an idiot. 2,000 shows.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you're here on this show, okay? Because we're going to talk about our favorite
2001 right here.
No. There you go. Oh, I've seen that movie. It doesn't end well. I don't know if I...
I don't know, Hal. I don't think I can do that. Sorry. You're screwed. SOL. Float out in space.
Side note, I had the funniest situation with that movie. I swore that I saw 2001 A Space Odyssey when I was in high school. I swear. I was like, I remember it. It was very, very bonkers. I remember it. So this was probably 5 years ago, 6 years. It was pre-pandemic. So it was either 2018, 2019, somewhere in there. Local theater is going to show it on 70 millimeter print. So I'm like, oh, okay. You know what? I'll go check this out. I went with a buddy. And Gerald, it opens and I'm like, what am I watching? I don't remember this. Da, da. Then it dawned on me, the only thing I actually saw of the movie was the middle section with the space people, the astronauts. I did not really see the whole movie because I'm like, what is with these primates and the obelisks and all this? What is this? And then at the end, I'm like, this giant baby? What the heck am I watching, man? And then it dawned on me, I only saw the middle part of that movie. So little.
Well, if you've seen Barbie, it recreates it very nicely. I'll just leave it at that. That intro, anyways.
You know, I don't know. I didn't love Barbie, but I didn't hate Barbie. I thought it was okay.
I thought it was good. I thought it was good. Yeah. And I think, you know, my family loved it. My daughters really appreciate it. I think it sends a great message and it sends a great deal of hope and encouragement to women out there. But as a movie, I really just thought it was very well structured. And again, anytime you get to see all those stars working together in such a great platform, just you got to welcome it. I mean, Oppenheimer, Barbenheimer, that whole thing collaborating together to create a better movie experience, and it worked. And mm-hmm. hopefully this year we'll find some success in the movie theaters as well. Please go check out Dune Part 2. I will say two things. Dune Part 2, everybody will see Deadpool because I know that. Dune Part 2, and then go check out fathomevents.com. There's a lot of really great movies coming back to the theater in limited release.
All right. Well, let's talk about our favorite matches. Do we want to kind of do them in any order, or we just want to throw them out there and discuss them? How do you want to do this?
Throw them out there, my friend. Throw them out there.
All right. You're my guest. I'm going to let you go first. Go ahead and throw out one of your picks.
Well, I was going to do the Road Warriors versus the Monkees. I was thinking about that. So, or let me see. I was going to go the Conquistadors versus the Ding Dongs. But man, I'm going to have to move a little bit away from that because those were right there on the cusp of what I wanted to talk to you about. But I'm going to have to stay away from that. I will probably lean towards my favorite all-time match. And I think I've mentioned this to you before. Rest in peace, Terry Funk. It is Terry Funk versus Ric Flair. I quit match. Troy, New York, Clash of the Champions, 1989. I know 1989 will always be remembered for the Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair matches, which were outstanding, brilliant of that era. But you want to see a match that sets up so many things. I liken it a lot to the 40-year-old virgin. The 40-year-old virgin set up a lot of things for actors in that movie as far as being able to use that as a platform for great things that they did later in life. That match was outstanding for what it set up for the industry as far as hardcore, as far as presenting psychology, as far as doing things that had not really been done or seen on a national platform at that point in time, because the 80s, I'm trying to not look through nostalgic colored eyes and colored glasses, but it was kind of generic. We were transitioning out of the old smoky types of, you know, arenas and matches into Hulkamania. But in doing so, we got a whole bunch of generic matches. The WCW World Championship Wrestling was the workers area where you would see really good matches. But the best of the best, in my opinion, And the best movie match I've ever seen, in my opinion, was Terry Funk versus Ric Flair. I quit. Just the intensity, the fact that I went in thinking, okay, I'm watching a two-time NWA world champion in Terry Funk facing off against Ric Flair. I didn't know for one of the few times in my life who was going to win and how they were going to win. I thought, okay, if it's either going to be a win for either one of them, and if Funk loses, he's going to be on the verge of giving up, but there's going to be a schmoz finish. You know, the whole rest of Gary Hart's army is going to come in there. They're going to interfere. No ending. Well, I was surprised when Funk said those words, I quit on the national. That was just because I had, you know, seen a lot of Funk, but I didn't know Terry Funk as far as what he was willing to do for the industry behind the scenes at that point in time, as much as I do now. So to see him say those words, I quit, was absolutely one of the few times I've been shocked in about a wrestling match in my entire life. And to see the way that they went through it, the angle that led up to it, mm-hmm. the fact that, again, you know, as far as pile driving Ric Flair's neck and him selling it like he did, although, you know, he was just taking time off, you know, just having vacation time. But still, it was, you know, the way they set it up, the way they executed and the way that they followed through upon it with a great match like that, it was just absolutely tremendous. Just absolutely textbook the way you want to do it. If you want to show somebody an angle from beginning to end to blow off, go ahead and show them that sequence. And that's probably it's probably one of the best ways I've seen it done. Again, I think there could have been still more added on to that, but still, what they did was plenty enough for me. That match was fantastic and absolutely set the scene as far as for making ECW tolerable and excitable and interesting for viewers out there on a national platform. It got WCW more eyes out there as far as being able to say that as far as the legitimacy against the WWE or WWF at that time. I just think it did a lot of things, and that match helped serve to go ahead and do just that.
Well, Terry Funk is actually on my list as well, because to me, I saw this as a young child and was just flabbergasted by it and still enjoy watching it as an adult. But one of my favorite matches is the empty arena match. Jerry the King Lawler.
My eye.
But how he went from that, like that whiny to, "You pig! You yellow belly pig, where's Lawler?" Like he's holding his eye. The whole Lance Russell kind of set up to that, where yes, Lance Russell's involved. It just captivated me as a kid. And still to this day, I thoroughly enjoy that, albeit, you know, I think it was only 8 minutes or 9 minutes, but it was to me just something I'd never expected before. You talk about like the hardcore, the ECW-esque type of feeling that you get from a match. This definitely had that, and even though it was 1981. But so it's a favorite of mine.
Because you always saw, even in the 80s, okay, I'll bring up my favorite feud of all time, which is Bruiser Brody versus Abdullah the Butcher. That was something that was never presented at a higher platform. They wrestled in more countries and in more associations than any other feud that I had seen before or since. But the thing is, it never got to the two places where it needed to go in either WCW or WWF. It was always sent on the side. It was always said, yeah, okay, you had to catch it in syndication somewhere. You had to catch it somewhere, Puerto Rico, WC, you know, World Class or something, just like clips here, clips there. It was never presented in such a fashion that you could go ahead and really, as a fan, say, you know what, this is going to take the industry somewhere else. This was just a feud between two guys. They're going to bleed all over the planet, and it's going to be in selected spots to selected crowds all over the world. They were never given that type of a platform. So Funk and Flair was given mm-hmm. that type of platform. The Jerry Lawler empty arena match with Terry Funk, just like the Memphis Brawl, the concession stand brawl, it's stuff of legend that you hear, and it has grown since then that people have been able to catch. I've actually seen it a couple times now, the empty arena match, and I enjoy it as well. So I can't say I blame you, but yeah, it's just, I think that funk and flair to me as well, just was something that, my gosh, put hardcore wrestling like the empty arena match at a different level and said, and it was made compelling, made for compelling TV.
I also think, even though this is, and at the time as a kid, I did not know this, but another favorite of mine is the Battle of New Orleans, which was a UWF match, Sting and Gentleman Chris Adams against Terry Taylor and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, where they basically did the Tupelo Concession Stand Brawl. But I didn't know any better as a kid. So it became, again, another one of those that it was wild. It was crazy. They fought out into the, you know, out in the back of the arena and that. Yeah, so, and I liked Eddie Gilbert and Sting. Whether they were together or they were separate, I liked them a lot. I think that Eddie Gilbert is a very underrated talent. At least I will say as a kid, I felt he was very underappreciated. Maybe nowadays in 2024, people look at him differently. But I think for many number of years, people did not appreciate him and what he could do in the ring and outside of the ring.
Well, and he was considered a big fish always in a little pond. He was never a big fish in a big pond. Best, even at WCW, he was only a mid-carder, made a mid-carder at best. And, you know, that was a waste of his talents. And I agree with you. His biggest moment in WCW is when he brought out Ricky Steamboat as his mystery guest partner in a tag team match against Ric Flair and Barry Windham, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was Barry Windham.
Yeah, so that's his moment of glory, and that tells you right there all the great matches he had, the series of matches with Cactus Jack on the independent scene for TWA, you know, absolutely outstanding, some of the most memorable matches that are out there. And you're right, he could not create the same magic at a higher level, so underappreciated would probably be the great word, either that or disrespected or just, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that.
I mean, he also ran Jerry over with a car. So, I mean, there was.
And they had brawls on top of a car as well.
Yes, they did. You're right. Uh-huh. You know what? You mentioned Flair and Steamboat 1989. I say this, Gerald, any Flair Steamboat match from any era, whether it's the late 70s Mid-Atlantic to 89 WCW, give me any of those matches. Love them. I will sit and binge watch those. I love me a Steamboat Flair matchup.
I agree with you. Absolutely. Those are very intense. And you know, when Ric Flair always talked about a 60-minute man, blah, 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 60-minute Broadways or anything like that, you have to point to there as far as not just the fact that he was doing that as far as the, you know, to the throwbacks to the old way of doing things where you had to have 45-minute, hour-long matches. It's just the way he could also create interest and intrigue throughout this match. Not a bunch of rest holds. He made everything interesting. Yes, you were doing sometimes Ric Flair doing the same things over and over with the Flair flops and whatnot. You could almost set your watch to it. But the way he would encapture the audience, Ric Flair, against a Ricky Steamboat, who brought out the best in him. They brought out the best in each other. Two great talents. And again, with Ricky Steamboat, you know, he just such a great talent. I could see why he never made it as a number one guy in the WWF, but still, it would have been great to see him get that kind of love because I think he deserved it. But I know he just couldn't cut a promo that was compelling enough to get him to that level. And I think that was his major flaw, but still getting him in the ring, giving him that world title run, having them go back and forth in 1989 is still for me the best overall year in wrestling. I think as far as from a in-ring product from all over the world.
Well, do you have any other favorite matches you want to discuss here?
Yeah, I was thinking about the Conquistador. No, I'm not. I was just gonna get back that to you. I mean, what about this year? Well, before we go back and touch on some of the over the years, did you get a chance to see the link I sent you for Josh Alexander versus Will Ospreay? Because
darn it, no, I have not watched that yet. I keep promising you. I'll tell you what, I will watch it before the next
State of Pro Wrestling. The Iron Claw.
So. I know. I'm putting it in my phone. I'm doing it right now. Fair enough.
Well, I will tell you, if you see that match, it is surprising to me, not Will Ospreay's performance, but to see Josh elevate himself to that level. It just, Will Ospreay at this point in time is probably, and I'm going to go even further on what I said before, I think he's probably the best wrestler on the planet because he brings out the best. It's not just what he does in the ring. It's what he does for his opponents in the ring. I mean, you and I talked about our disdain for Baron Corbin.
Mm-hmm.
I think if he went into the ring right now with Baron Corbin, they'd have a 4-star match. That's how good I think Will Ospreay is. I think he could have a 4-star match with my vacuum cleaner. I think right now it's absolutely fantastic what he's doing. But yeah, I think that match, if you get a chance to see it, it is something special. It's available on YouTube, so it's available right there for you. And I do also want to compliment the match that he had with Konosuke Takeshita at AEW Revolution. That is absolutely a fantastic match as well. Very hard hitting. I think that for me, the Alexander Ospreay told a tiny bit better story, but for as far as moves, yeah, that's a fantastic one. And then Will Ospreay versus Prince Puma. If you remember Prince Puma, aka Ricochet, they had a match which a long time ago, about what, six years now going on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you see it, that's a match whether you think, okay, is it ballet or is it an incredible match? And I'm leaning towards incredible match as far as the coordination that those two had. I think it's one of the most, it is the most acrobatic match I've ever seen. It's the most well-coordinated match I've ever seen as far as two guys doing high-risk spots, working with each other, clean, no mess-ups, no slip-ups, and just absolutely giving everything that they had. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I don't know if you've seen that one as well.
I have seen that one. That was from New Japan, if I remember correctly, Ricochet and Ospreay, and it was very good. You put me on the spot. More recently, I'm gonna go back to, I believe, Survivor Series. I thought The Miz and Gunther had a fantastic matchup that told a great story. I'm sure there's some other ones I'm forgetting. I know
Gunther, I'm telling you, Gunther is one of the most underrated wrestlers on the planet. I really think he, especially since he lost the weight, has absolutely been fantastic in the ring.
I think Imperium is great together as a whole. I think Ludwig has just such a, you want to punch him in the face. He's got that punchable face. I know that Kevin Owens uses that phrase, but he's just so slimy and so snooty and so arrogant that, and he does a great job with it. And Vinci's very good in the ring too. So I'm high on Imperium overall. Yeah, I'm trying to think of any other. I know there was a couple of Seth Rollins matches that I was real impressed with this past year, but I can't remember where they came from, to be bluntly honest with you, Gerald.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, if you get a chance, see Gunther in action. It is really something special. The way the man creates excitement. Dragunov, him and Dragunov, and when they were both in NXT, that was a physical match like you wouldn't believe. I mean, there were physical matches back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, whatnot, but this was a throwback match. So if you get to see Gunther and Dragunov, or Walter and Dragunov, maybe it's listed under from NXT. That's one of the most hard-hitting matches I have seen in quite some time. And Dragunov, who is the NXT champion, as far as him getting his own run, I think a lot of his success is based off that match. And a lot of eyes were open to Walter / Gunther because of that match as well. So hopefully everybody will get a chance at that match. That's one of the best matches I've seen this decade as well.
They straight up beat the hell out of each other. Let's just be honest. I mean, it was very good, very hard hitting, a little bit, maybe a little bit if you're squeamish, just maybe it might be a little bit too much for you. I was going to say, cause it's a hard hitter.
But I love it, man. Smack. All I remember. But, I do want to mention one other before we go back in the Wayback Machine,
sure.
One other match of recent note. And because he doesn't get often enough credit for being such a great individual in the ring is MJF, him and Bryan Danielson in the match that they had with the unique finish of an oxygen tank was absolutely a great way to finish off. It's actually one of the best matches also for me of this decade was the hour time limit draw that went overtime and he won the match by using the oxygen tank and actually as he was doing his gimmick at that time, he was going to tell you how he finished the match with whatever simple move with a little arm drag or whatever move he was going to be doing at that time. And he did it. He ended up, meeting his words, and it was just the way that they went about it. But yeah, that was a fantastic match and one of the best matches AEW history, in my opinion, as well.
Well, sticking in the 2000s, 2006, one of my favorite matches, I got to see it live, was from Ring of Honor. And it was Bryan Danielson taking on Lance Storm, who had come out of retirement for a match. That match was fantastic. I believe it's on the DVD Better Than Our Best from April of 2006. It was during those times, it was the beginning, Gerald, actually, of when Ring of Honor would do a show the weekend of WrestleMania. It was on a Saturday before all of those indie companies started doing this. I was out in Chicago for WrestleMania 22. My friends and I decided let's check out Ring of Honor as well. It was in nearby Chicago Heights, I believe it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic matches. It's set off by that match. Just fantastic to see Bryan Danielson work heel for the first time ever. He just knocked it out of the park, and that match was super awesome and a joy to watch over and over again.
I could also tell you, seeing matches, if people get a chance to check out some All Japan action from the late 90s, early 2000s, go out of your way to see Kobashi, Mitsuhara, Misawa matches. Those are fantastic. If you could check, Misawa is a name that dominated the late 90s and early 2000s, and there's a reason why he was considered at that time to be the best worker on the planet. And if you get a chance to go ahead and see that, absolutely. Yeah. Also, big Van Vader matches from the 90s as well. See, absolutely. For in Japan, if you can, please go ahead and check out those matches as well. But the one match, I think, I don't know if you've seen it because we have not mentioned any luchadors. I think the match you should see, and you mentioned Eddie Guerrero, I believe. Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr versus Hijo del Santo and Octagon from the Los Angeles Sports Arena, which is no longer in existence. It was when Worlds Collide, and that was the heat in that match was off the charts. And the fact that they wrestled the way they wrestled, the things that they did, the aerobatics, the involved, the just absolute, the high flying lucha, everything that people like about lucha. In fact, I just had Lucha Libre. That's what I was thinking about it, because I had Lucha Libre in San Diego. There's three great taco shops, burrito shops in San Diego. It's called Lucha Libre. Best burritos and tacos that you can find out there in San Diego. And it was making me think of that match because it is absolutely fantastic. That match was absolutely off the charts. It was a hair versus mass match, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to tell people who won because you can easily find it on YouTube. I want you to go out of your way to watch it and check it out. And Molly, I will say to you, my friend, because I think you already know and you already have seen it, the words I will say is you're welcome.
I will say this. This was part of the Win Worlds Collide pay-per-view that was funded by WCW, if I remember correctly.
Yes, they helped. In fact, Mike Tenay, a guy who I met, fantastic gentleman, and now a TNA Hall of Famer, got a chance to go ahead and be part of that broadcast coverage. And it's definitely something you should go out of your way to see.
I will surprise you. I have not seen that match. No, I want to see the entire event because that is a stacked show, and I would definitely love. I've seen clips of the, weren't they called the Loco Gringos?
Yes.
Wasn't that Eddie?
Yes, it was meant to be very demonstrative towards the Hispanic community as far as, it's the old trope, Americans, that trope that they always play upon, which, smart, because it always gets money and it always gets heat. But you can find it, I believe, on WWE.com. I believe it's on the WWE part of their whole encompassing as far as their universe there, as far as the WWE channel. So if you want to go ahead and check it out, it is there. But it is something also you can catch quite a bit of it on YouTube as well.
Well, you talk about luchadors. For me, this is another one of those matches where you give me any of these three competitors against one another, or Super Crazy Tajiri and Little Guido from ECW.
I knew it.
Any of those three. If it was Super Crazy and Guido, or all three of them in the ring, fantastic action. Very lucha-like, obviously, with Super Crazy and Tajiri having their background in lucha. Man, those matches were fantastic, and they were so darn fun, too.
You mentioned ECW. How about Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka?
How those two survived those matches, and I mean that, survived those matches, is beyond me.
I think
me.
Tanaka is still flying in the air from being thrown into the crowd.
And, you know, we can't forget Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam, because those two had some awesome matches as well in ECW.
I do want to mention, though, I would be remiss without getting one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, Cactus Jack. His Beach Blast match, Falls Count Anywhere on the Gulf Coast match with Sting, in honor of Sting's retirement. I think that's one of Sting's best. It's also one of Cactus Jack's, a.k.a. Mick Foley's, best matches. And really think it's something you're out of way to see. Though it's so funny because they made it a non-title match before the show. And I'm thinking to myself, if the result that happened was meant to happen, which, as you know, was going to happen, why did they make it a non-title match in the first place? Why not try to sell more pay-per-views by making it a title match? That was the thing. I bought the pay-per-view because of who was in it, but I could see somebody on the fence saying, well, I'm not going to watch a non-title match. The title's not on the line, so why should I care? Well, you should care because it was a fantastic match from Mick Foley and Sting being very inventive and creative, and Sting always loved working with Mick Foley. So it shows. It absolutely shows.
I have two more here I'm going to throw out there. And I think the one it's everybody's favorite, but Steamboat Savage, WrestleMania 3. Everyone loves that. I feel like that. If you say you love wrestling and you go, nah, that match was mid, you're crazy. You're a lunatic. Like that
it
match
still holds up pretty good.
Yes. Yes, it does. It absolutely does. My other one that I'm going to throw out there is, I believe it's from late 1986, Nick Bockwinkel versus Kurt Hennig, 1 hour draw, AWA television. I believe both men got busted open. They bled buckets. They had technical.
That's the one on ESPN, right?
Yes. It was from the Showboat.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the one here in Las Vegas. Yeah. I was not there for it. Of course, hadn't come to Las Vegas yet, but I did see that one. And of course, but the one that gets more notoriety is the Cow Palace with Larry Zbyszko and the role of Dimes. But that match, like you said, just the hour long that set that whole thing up, I think you're right. Absolutely. Bockwinkel could still bring it at that point in time at a show.
And the funny thing is, I didn't learn this until years later, like just literally maybe a few years ago. Bockwinkel was 52.
Yeah.
I'm like, he was taking bumps like a 20-year-old in that match.
He and Flair, I mean, they have that unique gift that they were able to produce at a high level in their late 40s, early 50s. I know the old adage in the business that you had the privilege of working in was that, okay, you're not really hitting your peak until your mid-30s. But these guys hit their peak in their 40s and even into their 50s. They were still producing high quality matches, and I couldn't agree with you more on how good a match that was. I mean, AWA had its share of clunkers, but every now and then you would find itself again, the Buddy Rhodes, Doug Summers, Midnight Rockers Bloodfest, that they have. They had one at the Showboat, which was fantastic, with Sherry Martel getting involved, and she gets really underrated. I think she's one of the best managers that's ever been in the pro wrestling industry. And yeah, you took two guys and Buddy Rhodes and Doug Summers who wound up being jobbers for the WWF when they left AWA, but still at that time they were made to be important in the AWA, and it showed against the Midnight Rockers. Absolutely. Yeah. It was a tremendous match there as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, any last ones here before we start wrapping things up, Gerald?
There's so many to go. As far as when you said this for a topic, I was like, man, this is great. But I hate you because now it's like I have to think of so many great it's a 4-star match. I don't think I really want to talk about that because it's only a 4-star match. Oh, I don't think it's about a 5-star match. When we go off the air, I'm probably going to hate you even more because there's probably going to be 3 or 4 matches that I'm like, oh man, I should have mentioned that on the show. I'm so idiot.
Well, you know
what? My eye, you egg sucking dog.
Well, you have the benefit that in 2 weeks we'll be talking again. So there you go. You could write them down on a post-it note, and then we could discuss them in the next State of Pro Wrestling. How about that?
If I will do that. I will absolutely, if that happens. But you know, we're going to be previewing WrestleMania.
That's true.
Card that's going on over the course of the weekend. Now that it's 2 days.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I'm sorry. In joke. Sorry. Got to keep saying that. So. But yeah, looking forward to it, my friend. Always looking forward to having a great conversation with you.
All right. Well, let's let the fans know one more time where they could find you on social media, websites, all that jazz.
Absolutely. Again, on social media, you can find me all over the place at Pop Culture Cosmos, Lakers Fast Break, and Inside Sports Fantasy Football. Please, if you're interested in pop culture and you like your movies, television, stuff like that, you want to be kept up on what's current, what's trending, check us out, Pop Culture Cosmos, wherever you get your podcasts, radio stations worldwide. We truly appreciate it if you give us a listen. If you're interested in the Lakers and the NBA, Lakers Fast Break, and then, of course, Inside Sports Fantasy Football. But yeah, and if you just give one of my shows a chance, that's all I can ask, and it's truly appreciated.
All right. This has been fun, Gerald. Thanks for coming on and chatting with me. And again, we'll be sitting down in a couple of weeks to highlight what might be happening at WrestleMania.
Do we have another cage match in the future, or is it going to be a different match this time for the titles?
I think it's an exploding Japanese barbed wire death match.
Oh, that sounds fun. All right. Count me in, my friend. Count me in. Question, did we win the titles coming out of the cage? I don't remember.
I believe we did.
Oh, sweet. Absolutely. All right. That's awesome. Defend our titles. Yes, absolutely. You know what? Anybody out there wants to go ahead and challenge for them? We're right here, buddy. Right here.
There you go. Right here. All right. Gerald, thank you very much. I appreciate you sitting down and chatting with me. And with that, fans, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Gerald Glassford talking about pro wrestling and our favorite matches of all time. And you know what? I thank Gerald for coming on the PVD cast. It's always fun to chat with him. If it's on my show or on his show, it doesn't matter. It's always a blast. So definitely check out all of his podcasts. You heard him run them down there. And check them out. If you love the NBA, Lakers Fast Break is for you. If you love pop culture stuff, check out the PCC. And Inside Fantasy Sports. I don't do fantasy football or anything like that, but if you do, check out Gerald's show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you where you can get in touch with me. If you want to complain about what we said about AEW, or you think some of the matches that we talked about are rubbish, let me tell you how you can get in touch with me. You can find me on X, at PVDMVP is my handle over there. That's my personal handle, by the way. But you can also drop me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. All you have to do is look for at PVDcast, and you can even shoot me an email if you want. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Maybe you want to let some folks know how they can listen to the PVDcast, and I would appreciate you spreading the word because that's the best type of advertising around. But nonetheless, I digress. You can find the PVDcast at PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, or it's available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to one of those outlets or apps, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And don't forget that you definitely want to rate and review. It helps me out in the algorithm, and it means a lot to me. And it also helps out the companies that are hosting these podcasts because they have a gauge of who's listening and when they're listening and all that stuff. And of course,
by the way, if you're rating and reviewing, you got to subscribe as well so that you never miss an episode of the PVD cast. But alas, there are two other ways that you can hear this great podcast. First off, you can hear it through the Facebook page every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a live broadcast. It's an easy way to hear that week's episode. Or you could tune in to CROC Radio, the internet radio station of the future, Croc Radio out of British Columbia. Every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can hear the PVD cast through Croc. Once again, one of the greatest internet radio stations of all time. Being a little melodramatic, but you know what I mean. The station's great. I'm so happy to be a part of it. So you should definitely check out the PVD cast and all of the great shows on CROC Radio. All right, ladies and gentlemen, with that, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you for checking out the episode. And with that, I shall chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.